Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are doing the Jackson Brown loadout here. It is our final segment at Mako. We're in Ocean City, Maryland. All of it brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. So nice. I had to do it twice. Press your luck with the whammies and the lucky seven doubles. It is our 27th anniversary. I am eating the final remnants of my ugly pie, death by coconut. It is day 20. We're continuing the countdown. We're going to be doing the show at a place that this guy represents, Fadley's, next Thursday down at Lexington Market. We have City Council President Zeke Cohen, defending champion, back on the show. Dude, this is the end of the end of the end. People are loading out here. We have sunlight. I can see the place I stayed in 1988 and 89 over at the Convention Center Plazas. How are you? Are you worn out yet? I mean, Mako wears people out.
Man, I'm doing great. No, I love it. I'm all gas, no brakes. You know, look, man, Baltimore's winning. I'm winning. And right now I feel like Baltimore's winning. So
I mean, you and I have gotten together on various occasions or in various roles in different ways. What are you excited about with Baltimore?
Well, let me say this. You know, look, our biggest challenge has always been public safety. And right now, despite what somebody who is staying at Pennsylvania Avenue has to say, we're seeing the lowest...
Somebody's sitting with Vladimir Putin right now, by the way.
So that guy. Yeah. We're seeing the lowest amount of homicides in our city's history. We're seeing a reduction in all Part 1 crime categories. And so this idea that we are too far gone is complete and total nonsense. This is the safest I've seen our city in a very, very long time. And I say that as a dad who's raising my two kids here, sending them to public school. I say that as the city council president who pays very close attention to all the crime statistics. So number one is public safety. Number two, man, I got to tell you, I just feel, and I know you'll relate to this, there's good energy in the city right now. Whether it's crab cakes and Fadley's, whether it's our incredible restaurant scene with the vibrance, the fact that you can be a chef-owned restaurant in Baltimore and not need a hedge fund backing you up to operate, I just think we're seeing a tremendous amount of creativity in our arts, our music, our culture. And so I would say there's an energy in the city right now that I think is very positive. And then the third thing is that, look, we feel like every time we get punched, and there's been a lot of punches, and most recently the president threw one, we pull ourselves back up. That is what I'm seeing consistently throughout my time in government here in Baltimore, is that people love this city, and the folks that just want to throw stones, they don't have it right.
People in the city don't quit on the city. It's the people outside who might not have been believers to begin with or believe in a different version of 1965 Baltimore that wasn't better or worse. It was just different.
Yeah, but let me say this, though, Nestor, which is that I didn't grow up here, right? I am in some ways, even though I've lived in the city for more than 20 years, I will forever not have gone to high school here. And so I'll always be a little bit of an outsider. But guess what? I love it here. This city, there is nowhere else in the world that I would want to rather be. My wife's a physician. We know we have one of the best hospital and medical communities in the United States of America. We know we are so proximate to D.C. and to New York and to everything else. We know that this is one of the last few affordable cities, and it's becoming more of a challenge here and everywhere. But think about where else in America, either East or West Coast, you could live the American dream, be a working person, either a teacher, a cop, an elected official, own a nice house, be near the park. I just think Baltimore punches consistently above its weight class. And whether people want to give us credit for that or not, I know what's happening in our city, and it is booming.
Well, when I considered public office and considered running, and you know, in the 5-6 years ago, I think I always see here, we have good bones, man. The things that you brag about, we could brag about now, 5 years from now, 20 years ago, whenever it is. The crime thing always got in the way of the bones, the structure, location, the hospital, sports team. You know, whatever makes the land of pleasant living the land of pleasant living, it's less pleasant when there are car jackings and murders leading. I mean, you talk about getting back up, the Key Bridge thing. You know, that alone, the level of resiliency it takes for all of us in the community to say, we're going to build that back, and we're going to build it better. And the way New York went back after 9/11, you know, it's just like we're not going to fall into second city status.
No.
We're going to figure this out.
No.
And I know I'm in the city 3-4 days a week. So whether it's bad or worse, the perception has always been the problem. In a general sense, I haven't been mugged. I haven't been shot at. I lived in a city 19 years. I walk around. I've worked in the city for 45 years.
And here's all I'll say is that the perception is a challenge, but it's also a lagging indicator, right? We know that anytime you have a pretty precipitous drop in crime, which we've had for the last 2 years, that it takes a while for people to catch up to that and for people to see it and feel it and feel more safe. But all I know is the numbers, and the story that the numbers are telling is that this is the safest that Baltimore has been in terms of reduction in homicide and non-fatal shootings in forever. Right. And since we started counting in the 1970s, we are seeing, and I don't want to jinx us, but we are on track to have our lowest year of homicides since we started counting. So I understand that there is still a narrative out there. We have a lot of work to do, Nestor, on telling our own story. It's why I'm always excited to come on your podcast, because it's Baltimore Positive, and I feel like you've been really great at finding the gems and not glossing over or not acknowledging the challenges, but
thank you.
Being really clear that this is a city filled with gems, whether it's Fadley's, whether it's the last place you and I got a crab cake at, I believe it was in Canton.
Chaucer, you and I.
Right, my man.
I call that Highland Town, but you call it whatever you want.
Well,
Upper Highland Town, Upper Canton, whatever helps sales, man. That's what I'm about.
Look, I live there. You don't, so I get to call it whatever I want.
What do you call it?
I call it Canton.
It's friggin' Highland Town. It's 2 blocks from the Highland Town Library. It's 2 blocks from Frank Zappa.
Fine. You can have it, but you know what?
Highland Town, to me, runs to probably where the park begins. Probably 2 blocks past where Hausner's was, where Matthew's Pizza. Matthew's Pizza, anything west of there, I don't know. Those row houses, but Patterson Park's in Highland Town, dude. Patterson Park's not in Canton.
Let me tell you this. I feel like Highland Town and just that whole Patterson Park piece is having such a beautiful renaissance right now. When I look at not just the Chaucer, but when I look at things like the sausage place on the other side of the street, the other side of Eastern Avenue, Snake Hill, which I know you've been to.
I've been to Snake Hill.
Yep. When I look
at the World Series complete there that night.
When I look at the Creative Alliance and just the art and energy that exists in that area, when I look at how vibrant the Latino community is. I mean, like, regardless of what, again, the national narrative is, the reality is that Highland Town has always been a place for immigrants, whether it was
Polish
folk,
German
folk, Ukrainian folk, or most recently, Central American folk, Honduran, Salvadoran. And guess what, man? Those folks, they dig in, buy houses, work hard, go to church, do what you're supposed to do for the most part. And it's been a real blessing, and I believe they're a big part of why that neighborhood has stabilized.
What would Highland Town be right now if it weren't for the Latin people? Right? I mean, so for me, being a Latin person, and my neighborhood is now 90% Latin, according to Rick Metzger, who I just saw a few minutes ago. Because, I mean, I grew up on Eastern Avenue at East Point Mall. So Highland Town was our pathway, man. My parents never drove, so we took the bus. The 23, and I spent every Saturday morning of my job, all of our shopping we did in Highland Town. Epstein's.
That's right.
All up
they
and down.
They told me that.
So that's
stores.
My, I took my first music lessons at Jaeger's, upstairs, across from Hausner's, the whole deal. I would say this crime issue and the murder issue and all of that, where do you tie that from that moment we were at Chaucer? And I think you and I were at Chaucer before the plague.
Yeah.
I want to say it was 19, you and I got together, probably 5-6 years ago.
Sounds about right.
Because it was definitely not masky, and it was before all of that, because I don't think it was even an issue at that point. We were talking about, I had you with the Patterson Arts Creative at the Alliance and all
That's
of that.
Right.
What has happened in those 6 years? Safe streets, a new mayor, new city council, like different council people, different governor, for recidivism, different things like that. But where do you pin the why, if you're going to explain? We know it's changed, but what made that happen?
Look, I think a few things. I think a lot of people deserve credit. And of course, Mayor Scott, just having a stable, solid mayor who, first, second term mayor since O'Malley, right? I mean, that's a big deal just because of all the turnover that it creates when someone leaves out. I think having Governor Moore care about Baltimore in a different kind of way has been huge for us. I think Ivan Bates has done an exceptional job at rebuilding.
Everyone's crediting him. I haven't had Ivan on in years. Talk about him for a minute.
Yeah, no, look, man, I think Ivan came at the job with a level of seriousness that we'd been lacking in that office. I think that, and I'm not going to throw shade on anybody, but I think that I'd watched junior state's attorneys just be decimated out of that office. I mean, their staffing level was unsafe for the city of Baltimore. And when Ivan came in there, he made it his mission to rebuild the office and to, you know, talk tough and say things like, if you're going to bring a gun, bring a toothbrush. But also to do the work of actually rebuilding an office that had been smashed to bits under his predecessor. And again, I mean her no disrespect, but I'm sitting in the city council and I watched it go from very few people and folks who should not been working murder cases because they were so understaffed to now where it is beyond functional. It is winning. And again, I think even though sometimes people do this thing where there's a narrative about the mayor and the state's attorney, you don't get along, I think they actually complement each other really well. I think that Ivan is a little more on the like tough on crime kind of take. I think the mayor is really good at understanding it's a comprehensive approach. It is law enforcement, and it's also safe streets, and it's also group violence reduction strategy, and it's community. And so the last piece I would say, Nestor, that I think has really been an engine for why we've had this comeback as it relates to crime is about community stepping up. Like people saying, enough is enough. We're sick and tired of it. And just the level of whether it's cooperation with local law enforcement, whether it's folks in neighborhood associations putting up the Ring cameras, going on walks and patrol, looking out for each other. I've just felt like these last couple of years, people in Baltimore have always been civically minded, but I think we're really digging in, supporting each other, collaborating, and having each other's back right now.
Well, the part where these murders were happening, as I understand it, and Safe Streets being a part of that, Roca, different things like that, was saying to someone in Trumplandia, I don't want to insult anybody, but you know who you are, whoever you are, the white people that are out in the suburbs who, I ain't going back down here for a ball game, I ain't going, you know, like whatever that was, right? That notion is saying that 6-7 years ago, a bunch of policy wonks and electeds would say, we're going to have them talk this through, and we're going to de-escalate, and we're going to, and you're like, these are thugs with guns who want to kill each other. Right, they don't really want to kill each other. They don't really want to be in a gang. They don't really not want to have a job. They don't sense any opportunity.
No, right? That's right.
Like, and so this part where we said there's going to be this de-escalate, we're going to come back in 5 years and there's going to be less murders because we talk it out and we hug it. That, I don't want to say that didn't sound normal to me when I was considering running for mayor because I had all of those guests on and I'm thinking about it. Well, what other choice do we have? We can't put everybody in jail.
That's right.
You know, and this notion that the young people that are carjacking, committing crimes, holding their parents responsible. Dude, I'm a Republican, and that, you know, I will take the right side of that and say that has to happen. That has to, that you can't have 14-year-olds out carjacking people, and there's no accountability, no adult accountability.
Yeah.
So I'm on the Ivan train with that.
Look, and again, what I would say, Nestor, is I think that people respond to the circumstances that they're in and the choices that they have in front of them. And so I think what has been really good about the group violence reduction strategy and this idea of giving people an opportunity to turn away from crime is it's a choice. And we all know that human beings are going to make choices. And the very clear choice that we give people who are persistent offenders is, look, we are watching you. We are going to be on you like white on rice. If you so much as jaywalk, you are going to not only get picked up, you're going to serve all of the other years that have been suspended off your sentence. And we have a state's attorney and we had a federal prosecutor from D.C., which we don't anymore, who in Eric Barron, who are going to make sure you go away for a very, very long time. But if you make a different choice, if you choose to get on the side of law enforcement, community, just doing right by people and stop the nonsense, we will make sure that you have what you need to be successful, whether that is housing, healthcare, a job, a career. We are going to make sure that you are going to have support in place. And I think people, when they have that choice in front of them, a lot of people will do the right thing. Some won't. right? And I think we all need to be honest.
And then lock them up. Let's go. Let's go.
Look, anyone who chooses in that juncture to go continue to harm community, I got no empathy for you. You got to go away, and you got to be out of my community because you are not going to continue to prey on the people that I love and care about. But I think in that situation, more people will make the right decision. That's why I think it's working. I think you have a good juxtaposition. Even though people are going to constantly say these guys are battling and Brandon and Ivan and this and that, I think you've got the right state's attorney. I think you've got the right mayor. And I'm proud to say I got a great city council working with me. I think my 14 folks are hungry. They're smart. It's just a good, aggressive group that wants to see right by our communities.
Well, I love to see your enthusiasm on all this, especially at the end of Mako. Zeke Cohen is our guest. He is the city council president. What's good? What's going on in the city? We got events happening, good things happening. Like, obviously, this BMW thing I'm going home for. Yeah. But, like, Baltimore's on the map here right now. The football team's clearly going to, you know, bring a little bit of that through. But, I mean, civic events and seeing I was down for what they do, the Italian-looking wine thing down at the harbor. Yeah. And then we're going to do the Christmas thing at the harbor. And we have built-in things. But well, for me, Harbor Place still and the hole in the ground with the mechanic, and I've talked about tax code stuff with Zach Blanchard here a couple days ago about that. But the notion of downtown making this comeback, CFG Bank Arena, comeback.
Huge.
Orioles, if they could ever fix it on the field, people would come and see them play. But the Harbor, the Harbor to me was my heart.
Yeah.
I gave 19 years of my life and hundreds of thousands of dollars of losses, honestly. Like, what I bought my place for, what I sold it for, at that point in my life, it's tragic that my investment was in downtown Baltimore in that way. And I almost ran for mayor because of it. But I look at it now and say, there's going to come a point where I hope to live long enough that I go back to that harbor and see whatever it's going to be when it grows up. But we got to go. We got to get something going here.
No, we can't wait. And look, you know, I'm really excited about both sort of what you talked about in terms of the energy of downtown, CFG Arena, the sports teams. You know, I was at the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra not too long ago for a Nas concert. That was amazing. For those of us that are in the younger millennial set, the sort of 40-ish crowd.
Well, the lyrics alive with events.
Come on.
Hippodrome's alive. I mean,
Center Stage is knocking it out of the park. We got new leadership
players,
at the Walters Art Museum. They're doing this whole, you should check it out, Latin exhibit. It's beautiful.
Artscapes got moved to the right spot.
Yeah, they did
right.
But let me say this on the harbor. I do think that we got the right partner in Mr. Bramble. I am excited about what is to come with his vision, with our vision. That needs to remain a incredibly pedestrian-friendly, walkable. It truly is an asset. It's one of the best waterfronts in the United States of America. And you're right, over the years, it was allowed to fall apart. It became decrepit, and the former ownership of those pavilions let them literally sink into the ground. And I'm excited for what this next stage can look like. And there are some folks who are naysayers, but guess what? There's always naysayers in Baltimore. That's part of our culture, too. People are going to be cynical. They're going to be down on a thing until they see it happen. And then, I was with that all along. I love that thing. Same thing happened the first time they did the Inner Harbor. There were a whole bunch of folks that didn't like it. Look, I know some folks have some questions about building up and apartments and all the rest. I got to tell you, though, in order to make this thing work, there has to be a financial component of it.
It has to pay for itself.
Otherwise, how does it go anywhere else in the world that's doing this kind of thing? I think about the National Harbor in D.C. I think about any of these places. There's got to be some kind of way for someone to make money, and I'm excited, man.
Well, I hope we get a shovel in the ground soon and a real plan, because I think that the enemy of anything's time in that way, right? I mean, the fact that mechanic is still a hole in the ground, and we're a decade and a half into having the Hippodrome.
It's bad.
Like, literally. You know, and it's such prime real estate, and I don't know, make that a park. Do something there.
But let me give you another one, though, Nestor, is do you know how many people, when we were doing CFG, said, oh, it's a terrible idea, no one's going to want to come to that, there's never going to be a concert, there's never going to be basketball. Look at it. It's killing it, man. Like, they're getting top-class acts at CFG. We're getting the CIAA to keep coming back. I mean, I feel like this is the perpetual thing in Baltimore, is everybody is down on everything until it works. And then they're like, oh, yeah, that was great. I knew it all along.
Well, I'm always with you, man. So I'm not in the city, but I'm in the city 3 days a week. You know that.
I know you are.
I can't vote for you. I can't vote against you, but I can certainly promote the good things that are going on and ask the tough questions when I get a chance.
That's it.
Biggest problem in Baltimore right now, if it's not crime, if it's not – take that out. That's always going to be number one. Yeah. Right now, what's your thing? What's the – we're going to change this. Because you're Mr. Positive, and that's beautiful, but I know there's three things on your list to keep you up at night that are making you work tomorrow.
Look, this is what I ran on. This is what I still believe, is that government needs to work effectively and efficiently for the people we serve. And I would say that while there has been enormous progress under Mayor Brandon Scott's leadership, there's still a long way to go in terms of execution and agency efficiency. I think about procurement. I think about permits. I think about just the ability for the 311 system to be responsive when folks see something they don't like and they dial the thing and then some action's supposed to happen. So a lot of what I'm working on as council president is about oversight and making sure our agencies are responsive to the needs of our residents in the city of Baltimore. That to me is the thing that really keeps me up all night is, look, I pay a lot of taxes to live in this city. You mentioned your house that didn't do well. I want, for those taxes, a great education for my kids, a sense of safety, and for government to simply work.
Quality of life.
That's it.
All right. Quality crab cakes and the crab tour. We're about to have some crab cakes. There's a huge crab feast down here in Ocean City at Mako. We're always part of it down here. I'm wrapping up things. You can hear it sounds like a Jackson Browns. It's the loadout going on here. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery, Pressure Luck, and the Lucky Sevens Doublers. I'll have these at Fadley's on Thursday. I'll have the Pizza John's on Friday. We begin the following week at Costas and Timonium. Also headed downtown, back down in your neighborhood, Fells Point. Upper Western Canton, I guess is what we would call Fells Point. We're going to be at Sláinte doing that, eating some delicious gumbo, and then we're going to wrap things up. Also in the city, I'm in the city 3 out of 5 days next week. Coco's, we're going to be in Lauraville. We'll have some great guests there
as well. You better shoot me a text when you're coming. Shoot me in Brandt. Shoot me in the mayor a text. We'll come down and say hey if we're around.
I'm at Coco's on Wednesday the 27th. Is Wednesday the 27th? That is correct.
No, never mind. I have a hearing that day. I'm not going to be there, but God bless you and good luck.
It's 1-2-27. All right.
Yeah.
It'll still be a great show, even though you're not there.
I know it will.
Zeke Cohen, City Council President, joining us here, signing off from Ocean City on behalf of our sponsors, Acurio Wellness, Foreign Daughter, our friends at the Maryland Lottery, as well as our newest sponsor, not in the city, but some GBMC, one of our great sponsors. We're going to be talking men's health. They're going to make me go to the doctors and a colonoscopy. I am Nestor. I know I need to do that. I'm 56 years old. I'm Nestor. We are not tonight, though. I'm going to go eat crabs and drink beer and see bad with names. Back for more in Baltimore from Ocean City. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.